We don't quit, we don't cower, we don't run. We endure and conquer. Hello everybody and welcome to another episode of the Sports for Champions podcast. Today I'm delighted to be joined by Danny Evans. Danny, how are you today?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, not so bad, thank you.
Good.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So I started the podcast with a quote from the late, great Kobe Bryant, one of the most inspirational figures in the sport. Can you tell me a little bit about what inspired you to first get into basketball?
Honestly, I went to an after school club when I was in year four in primary school, and you know, had a little bit of a natural ability for it. And my coach that was coaching that session, you know, he saw that natural ability and he invited me down to a club session at the local club that he was running. And from there, I just, after the first few sessions, I just kind of caught the bug for it. You know, he let me know that I had some potential in the sport and that if I wanted to, I could really, you know, do something and take it quite far. So from there, you know, I just started watching YouTube videos and things like that, and just became more and more inspired as time went on. And when I was about 10 years old, decided that, you know, this is what I wanted to do for a career. So, yeah.
It's a really young age to know, to with such certainty, that's what you wanted to go down.
Yeah.
Now, you come from Leeds originally. Can you tell me a bit about the basketball scene in Leeds at the time?
So the basketball scene in Leeds at the time was not very big. There was just one club. It was a fairly, you know, modest club. There was no one really that had done what I kind of had set out in my mind of what I wanted to do. So there wasn't really like a blueprint to follow in terms of, you know, this guy did this and so I should go here and the steps I should take. So I kind of felt like all the way along my journey, I've kind of just been, you know, taking inspiration and leaning on people that have done it in other areas, whether it be other parts of the world or other parts of the country, and I'm trying to mold it into making it work in the framework that allows me myself to be successful. So,
yeah, it's such a big deal to obviously be the first person from your city to kind of forge that path. Can you tell us about the first step where you kind of took it above that the amateur level and sort of realised that you could take this professionally?
Yeah, so I was playing for my junior club, like I said, up until I was 18. But when I was about 13, 14, I came on the radar of regional teams. So Yorkshire, and we played at regional tournaments and things like that. And then eventually I got selected for England at the under 14 level, and we went out to Turkey for a tournament out there, and that was a great experience for me, just to kind of it was the first time, like many things, that anyone from Leeds had played for the country. So that was big for me to kind of see what there was out there and see the world of basketball from a different perspective, and it really opened my eyes to what I wanted to do. And we're going to games, we've got security at the games, and we've got like fans asking for kids asking for autographs and stuff, and I was just a kid myself. So for me that was like, wow, like, I really want to do this and take it somewhere and make money from this one day.
So you said that your coach saw a natural talent in you from that first sort of session. I think that was before you were 10 years old even.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about the step up when you go to them international tournaments, and you know, maybe talent doesn't matter as much, and the kind of competition that you face when you go out there?
Yeah, for sure. So when you're at that kind of level, even as young as 14, you know, you get a different perspective on things, and you realize that, okay, on the one hand, I might be the best in my city at this game, and you know, there's so many more people out there that are doing the exact same thing that I'm trying to do and trying to achieve the same thing I'm trying to do. So for me, I always took that kind of those experiences of playing at those high levels as inspiration for me when I'd go home and back to Leeds and train on my own. You know, I knew that it wasn't the guy from the next school that I was trying to compete with, it was guys in different countries and across the world I was trying to compete with for what would eventually be a very limited amount of spaces at the professional level. So yeah, that's kind of the perspective it gave me.
It's a great concept, and something that would be really important probably for the viewers watching at home, the young kids thinking about getting into sport. Do you want to be the best in your country, or do you want to be the best in your school? And do you think it was difficult for you to reach that next level, or did it come quite easily to you?
No, it definitely was far from easy. You know, I had to constantly work every day, and I was very fortunate. You know, I had coaches that would told me from a very young age like what it would take, even though they necessarily hadn't done it themselves. You know, they knew from experience what it would take to reach the kind of levels that I aspired to reach. So, you know, that kind of influenced me to put in the extra work and to, you know, get up early on a morning and do a workout before school when I was 12, 13 years old, you know, things that 12 and 13 year olds don't usually do. You know, setting alarms at 6 o'clock in the morning to do 100 push-ups, 100 sit-ups and things like crazy things like that when I look back on it now. But I kind of chuckle to myself when I think about those moments, because it's moments like that, you know, the odd time it might not make a difference, but over a long period of time, you know, those things add up, and eventually I think played a big part in why I've been able to do what I've done so far in my career. So
it really did pay off for you, obviously. You ended up out in America playing college basketball. Can you tell us a little bit about how that came about?
Yeah, so I was, you know, 17, 18, doing my A-levels here in the UK, back home in Leeds. And, you know, at that time it was very difficult for you to get a scholarship offer from a university in the States, because, you know, you needed exposure to those kind of coaches, and they rarely were they going to offer you a scholarship based off of just video footage. So for me, again, it was kind of on me at that point to put myself out there. So I remember being in my sixth form common room and, you know, sending hundreds of emails out to different coaches and different emails that I could find on the internet, over in the States, with some guidance from people that I knew that had do that and who I'd reached out to. But, you know, they basically told me, look, you have to put yourself out there. So I sent, like I said, hundreds of emails out with my highlight tape, with a little cover letter, and, you know, explaining a little bit about myself and how I was looking for this opportunity. And then, you know, a handful of schools came back and said, okay, we'd like to take you on. These are just prep schools at this point. Prep school is like a year between finishing high school and going to university or college, and as they call it in the States. And yeah, from there, dwindled down to a couple that could offer me a scholarship, and I accepted one of them and went out there, and that was for a year. And that year basically was going to be for me to put myself out there to these college coaches that would offer me a 4-year scholarship, which is worth, you know, almost a quarter of a million pounds over there for university. So that was a big deal, and I was able to play well in my first year out there. I was in the Boston area playing for a school team, and yeah, got offered a full scholarship to university over there.
That's amazing. How old were you when you got offered that scholarship?
I was 18.
18, wow. Yeah. So you moved your whole life out at 18, presumably on your own as well.
Yeah.
How was that, landing in America?
It was an experience for sure. I was very fortunate that, you know, the school I initially went to, you know, had a lot of really, really good people there, and I met a really, really lot of really, really good people that I'm in contact with today, that helped me out, helped me, you know, acclimatize and get used to that way of life out there. And but yeah, no, it's definitely daunting, and taking a step in the deep end, you know, away from friends and family over here. But I wouldn't have changed it for the world.
Yeah. Of course, yeah. Yeah, it's only putting yourself in those uncomfortable positions that helps us to grow. Can you tell us a little bit about the differences, if there is any, between the American game and the European game?
There's a few differences. I'd say it's one thing I noticed from initially going out there was the athleticism. People are just, they play it so much more frequently over there, that very quickly, you know, at the higher level, they dwindled down, and you left with the more athletic people, you know, people that are faster, stronger, quicker. So that was a big difference when I first got out there that I had to adjust to.
What position do you play?
I'm a shooting guard.
A shooting guard. Yeah. And have you always played that position?
No, I played more point guard growing up. And I still, you know, I'm fairly versatile, so I can play point guard and shooting guard as well, but predominantly now a shooting guard.
You do find in most team sports that young kids start off in all the offensive positions, then a lot of them have to work their way backwards. Is that something that kind of happened to you? Or?
Not really. I mean, in basketball, everyone has to attack and everyone has to defend. So for me, it was, you know, I always wanted to be someone that had quite a lot of control over the game, and because of my skill set, my natural ability of being able to pass and dribble and shoot, you know, coaches always kind of pushed me to have that point guard role. And I don't know how familiar you are with basketball, but the point guard is, it's more likened to like a centre mid in football, so, or like a scrum half in rugby. So you're you have a lot of control over the game. You make a lot of decisions on where the ball is going to go and what the tempo of play is going to be. So that was where I always just kind of ended up when I was younger.
It feeds quite nicely into something I was going to ask you anyway. So what is it about you, what are your main attributes that make you good for your position?
For my position, you know, I've got quite a good shooting ability. I'm pretty well known for my shooting ability, you know, from the outside. So three-point shooting is something that is definitely a strong point for me. But generally, I like to affect the game in a lot of different ways. You know, I mentioned that I can handle the ball, I can pass the ball, and I can defend pretty well. So I feel like, because your shooting ability is not always going to be there, there's going to be days when, you know, the ball's just not going in the basket. So I always try to make myself valuable to my team and to my teammates in a variety of different ways. So yeah, but predominantly my strength is my shooting.
And then obviously you finished your college in the States. How did that come about? Do you come to the end of your, like, literally your university life, and then you kind of, there's a bit of a scramble there for the next contract and that kind of thing?
Yeah, more or less. You know, going into my last year of university, you know, obviously I was about to be graduating, and then, you know, like it is with normal non-athletes, you know, you're thinking about what's the next step. You know, what are you going to be moving on to after you graduate? And I had, you know, agents that were contacting me and wanting to represent me, and so I knew that going into that time period, that because of the amount of agents that were contacting me, that an opportunity would probably present itself to play professionally, which, you know, was a huge deal for me. As I said from the beginning, that, you know, it wasn't something that had been done before from where I came from back home in Leeds, so that wasn't something that I took lightly. And yeah, eventually I decided to go with an agent, and the agent, you know, found me a contract. So yeah,
it's great, it worked out so well. Obviously that doesn't happen for everyone. Presumably while you're at college or university, as it is here, you are actually studying as well. How important do you think it is to have that backup to fall back on if professional sport doesn't work out?
Oh, it's hugely important. You know, it was something that from a very young age, from probably around the time when I told my mum that I wanted to go to America to play college basketball and then play professionally after, she was always like, I wouldn't be able to go to training when I was like 14, 15 if I didn't do my homework first, or things like that. So academics is just as important when you're young as the athletics is, in my opinion. And like you said, having that fallback, you know, okay, plan A, it might be, for me, plan A was always to play professional one day, but I always made sure that I managed my time effectively and was able to do my schoolwork as well, so that if the worst was to happen and I was to have a, you know, career ending injury, that I would be okay in myself and in what I could fall back on. So yeah, I did a business degree, graduated in that, and yeah, so I have that to fall back on if anything does at some point go wrong.
That's brilliant. And then so the agent phone calls come, you've obviously graduated now and you're kind of out into the real world. Who was it who gave you the call that you eventually took the offer?
the call that I was had been offered a contract. It was my agent. So yeah, he called me and let me know, and we assessed it with a couple of other offers that I had, and you know, after talking with friends and family and other people that I trust a lot with, you know, my career and the decision process, I decided to take that offer, and ended up on a team out in Spain. So yeah, that was a really special moment for me.
So from Leeds to America to Spain, how was it? The bit of another acclimatizing sort of experience for you. How was it rocking up in Spain?
It was an experience for sure, especially during COVID time. So that was in 2020, in, you know, the September of 2020. So things were just slowly starting to not get back to normal, but, you know, ease up on the lockdown side of things. But it was a big adjustment, for sure. Just a language barrier. You know, it's one thing from 18 going from England to America, but they speak the same language as you, to going to Spain, where, yeah, okay, in the major cities people speak English quite a lot, but, you know, a lot of times they don't. So getting used to that, having to pick up, you know, different parts of the language. A lot of my teammates during the practices and stuff, it was just Spanish that was spoken. So if you imagine trying to figure out what's going on in a certain drill or what the game plan is in certain moments, that was a big adjustment for me. But that was, you know, what I signed up for in the end. So yeah, I was ready for that adjustment.
What about the food? Would you go for American food or Spanish food? What would you pick?
It's a tough one. To be honest, I'd go for Spanish now, I think. But if you'd asked me when I was 18, I'd have said American food for sure.
Yeah. I didn't put Leeds in there. Maybe there is some Yorkshire
no.
dish.
What, Yorkshire puds? No. No, I'd definitely go for the more exotic stuff.
Cool. So then you were playing in Spain through the pandemic, and obviously there wouldn't have been any crowds there. There have been a lot of difficulties around training and bubbles and things like that. How did that work out?
It was tough at times, to be honest. You know, not having the fans at games and things like that, you know, for a lot of athletes, that's why we love doing what we do. You know, being able to entertain, you know, friends and family and fans and things like that, at games, and it just gives you that extra buzz once you're in the stadium or the arena that you're in. Being able to, you know, hear the crowd and, you know, the cheers or the boos if you're in an away gym. But without that, it was tough at times, honestly. But yeah, it was the same for everyone else, so I can't really complain. Like, it was just me or just my sport.
And then now you're back in the UK, and you've recently been selected for the squad for Team England for the Commonwealth Games, so congratulations on that. How did that feel?
Felt amazing, honestly. You know, I wasn't really expecting it. I knew it was on the radar that opportunity could present itself, but, you know, I'd just come back from injury. I missed the second half of this past season with injury. So to come back from that after all the rehab and everything, and then go to the selection camp and be selected to be part of the squad for the Commonwealth Games here in Birmingham was a pretty big deal for me and my family. So yeah.
Sorry. And I believe that you will be signing for the Cheshire Phoenix.
Yeah.
So obviously that's quite close to our office where we're sat here now. So we'll be hopefully getting to a few games once the season gets up and running. How is that? How did that come about?
To be honest, like as I said, the second half of the season I was injured. So it was a tough period for me, you know, not having the uncertainty of, you know, injury and not knowing what was going to happen with that. I just felt personally for me that some time back on UK soil, playing here in the BBL, which is the league, the professional league here, would be good for me at this point in my career. And, you know, I think that the Cheshire Phoenix is, I really like what they were trying to do and the kind of opportunity that it would be for me personally in my career and as a step going forward. So I'm really excited about it, you know, playing close to home for the first time since I was 18 when I went to the States. So that's 7 years ago now. So yeah, I'm really excited about it. And hopefully, you know, some of you guys in the office will be able to come through to some games.
We love a day out, definitely. We'll be there 100%.
Good.
So you had a couple of I know you've had quite a few bad injuries, and then you spent half of last season basically injured.
Yeah.
What kind of injuries have you been picking up?
Well, to be honest, I've been fairly lucky with injuries. I'd class myself as, you know, when I was 15 and 17, I broke my ankle, the same ankle, but, you know, rehabbed from that and didn't have any problems then right up until I was until this past season, and I'm 25 now. So I think I did pretty well in terms of injuries, you know, through college, through university. I didn't miss any games because of injuries, so that was good. But yeah, this most recent one was a groin injury, and you know, it's kind of hard to escape that. It's just one of those things that happen, and you know, in this industry, you know, that's life. Injuries they're inevitable. So I'm just, you know, I'm proud of the way that I approached it, and you know, was able to come out the other side and now be back playing healthy. So yeah.
And then how did your recovery go with that? I know with basketball, obviously, there's so much twisting and turning. You're putting a lot of stress on a lot of your joints and muscles. How do you go about approaching rehab for something like that?
To be honest, I try to take as much advice from the professionals, so the medical staff and things like that, people that really know what they're doing. You know, with injuries, it can be really tough, and for any athlete in any sport, just the uncertainty and, you know, the mental stress that plays on us, because ultimately we're not able to do what we love to do. But you know, I think what calmed me down and what put me in the right frame of mind to be positive about my recovery was the fact that I was just, you have to trust the medical staff. So find a medical staff that you trust and that you believe in, and that want the best for you and want to get you back healthy as quick as possible, and then just, you know, double down and pay attention to the rehab process as much as you would any other training session when you are healthy. You know, turn up every day, and little by little, you know, you get to the end of the tunnel and you're back healthy playing again. So yeah.
So it's so important to have the right advice around you and have the right access to the right information. I know back in 2019 you started the Find Yours project, which is kind of a not-for-profit organization aimed at helping people find their passion, kind of thing. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So I started the Find Yours project in 2019 with two of my best friends from home. You know, we felt that we had used basketball and the kind of life lessons that we learned from basketball, because that was how I met them when we were kids, and you know, used those life lessons in everyday life. You know, obviously I went on to play professionally, but they used it to do other great things as well in other avenues. So we wanted to kind of encourage young people to do the same, and not necessarily through basketball, but through anything, whether it be like, you know, art or something creative, or you know, dance or anything, something that they can really find a purpose with, and you know, find something to be focused on that is going to allow them to channel positive, you know, things for them in the future. And you know, you learn lessons of life through things that you do when you're younger, and I think if you can find something positive to stick on and to get up for in the morning every day, then even if it doesn't end up being a career path for you in the future, it's something that has benefited you at a young age. So I think that's really important, and that's what we try to do with the project.
It's a really inspirational message, and you really jumped out to me as somebody who'd be a fantastic athlete partner for Sports for Champions. Can you tell us a little bit about how Sports for Champions will help you with maybe training costs, maybe overseas visits, that kind of thing?
So Sports for Champions, I mean, it's a great avenue for athletes like myself, you know, to kind of have touch points with young people. I think that athletes are a great way to inspire young people to ask for more from themselves and to believe in themselves and more, that things are possible. and yeah, I mean, for me personally, you know, having something like Sports Champions is great that I can do, you know, on my off days from practice or from games, and you know, use it to my advantage.
It's really important for kids to have access to people like yourself and to see what can be done. Obviously, coming from Leeds, where nobody had made it overseas to play basketball on a professional contract before, and you've kind of opened the door, and that now other people are following you and doing things that are similar. Can you tell us a little bit about what motivated you to actually go and do that in the first place? Because obviously you were told at a young age that you had a bit of talent, but then obviously to put in that work, you do need a special type of motivation, I think.
Yeah, to be honest, it's hard for me to pinpoint just one thing. I try to take inspiration from, like, on a daily basis, honestly, from multiple different things, but you know, I always wanted to do something that was big for me, but also big for, you know, more than just myself. And you know, growing up, it just seemed like at the right time there was always that little bit of inspiration that would push me, nudge me along and take me closer to realizing what I wanted to do, you know, whether it was breaking my ankle when I was 15 and then having five months out and just realizing, okay, this is my thing, and through doing that I can, you know, affect or inspire other people to, you know, overcome things, or and little things like that that have inspired me and pushed me along a little bit more along the way. And then, you know, on the most basic level of, you know, I wanted to be able to do what I'd love to do in front of thousands, millions of people one day. And I just didn't want to allow anything to stop me from doing that, and wasn't going to stop, allow anything to stop me from doing that the whole way along. So, yeah.
So you had the talent and you put in the hard work. What do you think is the most important aspect out of the two of those when it comes to making it, as it were?
I think that hard work for sure is the most important. You know, I always think about this, but I had a lot of people. I'm by no means the most talented basketball player, but I knew that growing up I would work harder than the person next to me. When it came to competing for a certain sport, whether it was for a national team or competing against people that I couldn't even see that were competing for the same, you know, university scholarship in America that I was, I knew that I would work harder than them. And I think that that's just it's a really important message, you know, that at a young age there might be someone that is more talented than you or further along than you on your journey, but as long as you just keep chipping away and keep working hard and focus on yourself and what you need to do to improve, it's funny how when you look back on things in a few years time, how many of those people that were at one point ahead of you aren't anymore, and sometimes they're not even playing anymore, or in that same category as you. So as long as you focus on yourself and work hard, then the talent disparity will even itself out eventually.
It comes up all the time on this podcast, the people who are maybe at the top of the class when they're young and maybe they're taller than everybody else, and then everybody else catches up and they start having to work just
as
hard.
It's true. It's very, very true. You know, we spoke briefly before, but that quote of, you know, hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard, it's a cliche. It's more of a cliche now, but it's so, so true. So, yeah.
And how often are you training at the moment?
At the moment, I'm training probably 5 or 6 times a week. It's difficult in the off season to find that balance between doing too much and, you know, not doing enough. For me, you know, just coming back off injury, I know that I have to be, as much as I want to train every day, I know that I have to let my body rest and things like that. But yeah, you know, obviously I'm part of the Commonwealth team, so I have to stay fit and stay healthy for that. But at the same time, I'm trying to improve different parts of my game for next season, which starts in September, so that I can continue to progress in my career.
So in with your training, how much of it is kind of skill work? Like, how much are you actually like doing physical conditioning, that kind of thing? How does all that play off against each other?
So right now, the balance that I've got is on mornings, 4 times a week, I'm in the gym. So that's like the lifting gym, doing strength conditioning. And then in the evenings, 5 times a week, I'll be on the court doing skill work. So yeah, that's kind of the balance that I've got at the moment.
And do you always eat healthily?
Yes. Yeah, I do.
Always?
I have a cheat day here and there. Yeah. But for the most part, you know, I'm pretty strict on striking a balance between the things that I eat. And for me, honestly, sometimes I'm not eating enough with the amount of training that I do and the amount of calories that I'm burning each day. You know, I have to make sure that I'm eating enough of the right things to keep myself ticking over.
Have you got a go-to post-training meal?
Not a go-to. I'd say for lunch, I'm the best scrambled. If you want scrambled eggs cooking, I am the guy to go to. Yeah, that's my speciality. But besides that, I don't really have a go-to.
And when you said you have the odd cheat day, is there something you really look forward to on a cheat day? Something you miss when you're training?
I've got a sweet tooth. I love desserts. So yeah, if it's ice cream or some kind of dessert, I'll on my cheat day, that we're going crazy on that day. Yeah.
So obviously the sacrifices that you have to make to keep you at that level can be huge. Do you think that the life of a professional athlete is tough to maybe some other people in the world?
Yeah, I think it is. You know, some people are of the thought that, like, is it really work? You know, like, is it because the, you know, if other people have like an office job or a 9-to-5, they might see what I do or what we do as athletes as, you know, just walking apart. But there's a lot of things that even besides the training and the things like that that you don't see, whether it be the mental preparation that you have to have going into games or perform or competition, just to put yourself in that right frame of mind. You can't just turn up on a day and go out and play, put your shoes on and go out and play. There's a whole process that you have to go through to get yourself in that place where you can put your best performance out on the court or the field or whatever it might be. So yeah, and I think just like the discipline it takes, you know, on days that because we're humans at the end of the day, and there's days where we wake up in the morning and we just do not want to go to practice, or our body is tired and we do not want to, like, we don't want to do it. But those are the days that kind of I have this thing of, like, those days when you feel at your worst and you really don't want to go to practice, those are the days that actually count. Like the days when you feel great and you get up in the morning and you have a great breakfast and you know, can't wait to get to practice, those days it's easy to do that. It's the hard part and the ones that matter are the ones when you really don't feel like it, and they eventually add up and allow you to progress.
I think Muhammad Ali said that he didn't start counting push-ups until it started hurting.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great quote.
It actually feeds quite nicely into what I was going to ask you next. So do you have like a favourite sporting hero?
Muhammad Ali.
There you go.
Muhammad Ali is probably my favourite. Obviously phenomenal at what he did in the ring, but just the way he carried himself, you know, the spoken word, the poetry that he would taunt his opponents with before the fight, after the fight, during the fight, and then you know, the things he stood for as a man, is something that inspires me on a, you know, regular basis in terms of what I do off the court, or, you know, what I aspire to do off the court. So yeah, I think he's one of my biggest sporting role models for sure.
He's such a big proponent of civil rights in a time in America where that would not help your sporting career whatsoever.
No.
I know that you actually were quite involved in 2020 in Leeds around some of the protests that happened there. Can you tell us a little bit about how you see politics and sport?
To be honest, during that time, well, before that time, there was a big, you know, narrative that athletes shouldn't get involved in politics or in anything that was outside of their field of their sport. Because they weren't qualified enough to do it. But I think during that time in 2020, when those movements were so prominent in, you know, mainstream media, I think we kind of all saw that athletes are just humans at the end of the day, and they have interests, and we're educated just like anybody else is. You know, I went to university and got a degree like everybody else. So, you know, we have views and opinions which we can use what we do and the people that look up to us in what we do and influence people in positive ways. So yeah, I wouldn't say they go hand in hand, but that they can definitely be used for the right reasons together.
And then, do you have like a favorite sporting quote?
I have a quote. I don't know if it's technically sporting, but I kind of frame it or think of it in my mind, and it helps me in the field of sport. And it's be where your feet are. It's a simple one. It was introduced to me a few years back, and you know, I think that in sport, especially, we can often get caught up in the next thing, like in the future. You know, what's this next competition? What's the next practice? What's the next what's the next goal to achieve? But what really, really matters is what's happening right now in the present moment. Hence, be where your feet are. Like, just be there. Like, be exactly where you're standing right now, and be totally present. Because if you do your best, the best that you can do in that moment, then the rest will take care of itself eventually. So yeah, that's a big one for me.
Does being an athlete make you a better person?
Yes. Yeah, it does. It gives me a positive reason to push through you know, daily challenges of life that just come up for everyone. And you know, I try to be a good person, you know, and be myself in every aspect and anyone I come into contact with. But basketball and being an athlete definitely channels me in really positive ways.
Is there something that you always do after a good performance?
Something that I always do, like a ritual, or
we've had a few different answers to this. We've had everything from McDonald's to just like maybe calling the mum. Yeah, there's a lot. It's a wide spectrum.
Yeah, there is actually one that I've in the last couple of years that I've done. Since I turned pro, actually, after a really good game, like, I might just have a pizza.
Pizza.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay.
Just treat myself to a pizza. But besides that, you know, I like to. It's because I've been away from home for so long. I constantly like to. Family's a big thing for me, so I'll just like pick up the phone and FaceTime my family after a big game and just talk to them about it and things like that. Or friends, close friends, because they obviously it's hard for them to come to games and be there with me after a good game. But now that might change, hopefully. Now that I'm playing in England, that, you know, them people that mean a lot to me will be at the game, so I'll be able to spend that time with them after the games. But we'll see.
I think so. Do you have a favourite music to listen to prior to competing?
No, to be honest. I like to just whatever I'm listening to, whatever I feel like I want to put on my phone at that point, I'll put that on. I try to stay away from, you know, specific song at a specific time and da da da, because, you know, life can change all the time. Something that might be good to you at the start of the season might not be at the end, and I don't like to get caught in superstitions like that. But yeah,
it's interesting because there's a lot of athletes who will listen to really hype music to get themselves hyped up.
Yeah.
But I've also spoken to athletes who like to listen to calming music because they're hyped up enough already by the occasion, and actually they need something to kind of bring themselves back down.
That's true. I'd say there's not a specific music that I do listen to, but there's a specific music that I don't listen to, and that is the hyped up music like that, because I'm just I don't need anything to get me any more, like, if anything, I need calming down. So yeah, try to stay clear from the screaming in my ear.
Is there anything else that you do to try and calm the butterflies before a big game, maybe?
I have breathing techniques that I'll do, just to kind of try and put myself in the best frame of mind, you know, turn the anxious thoughts or feelings into, you know, feelings of excitement. And just like I said, similar to along the lines of the quote that I said, you know, be where your feet are, just to remind myself that to stay present in the current moment and not worry about what's going to happen in the future or what's happened in the past.
Yep. And do you have any advice that you might give to somebody looking to start out in basketball now?
Just pick up the ball and find your own, like, love for it. You know, there's not much that the most important thing is to find what you love about the game and then just run away with it. Let your mind run away with, like, imagine, let your imagination run away with yourself, work really, really hard if that's what you want to do and that's what you set your mind to. I don't know if I mentioned it already, but I, you know, when I was 10 years old, just starting out, like, I've written a piece of paper that I wanted to be a professional one day, and I kept that piece of paper. And, you know, luckily enough, after a lot of hard work, it eventually, you know, happened for me. I mean, anything is possible. So, set your mind to it.
That's amazing. Well, there you go, guys. Thank you very much for joining us today, Danny.
Thank you for having me.
No, it's been an absolute pleasure. So thank you all for joining us at home as well. Make sure you give us a like, a comment, and a subscribe, and make sure to check us out again for some more Sports for Champions fun. See ya. Hi, guys. Hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, be sure to leave us a like and a subscribe, and check out all our other videos for some more great interviews and content. Bye.